Are you seeing the warning signs in our country? Signs that we're about to go through a cultural shift like never before? Dr. Erwin Lutzer is the pastor emeritus of the Moody Church, where you served as senior pastor for 36 years. You're an award-winning author of many books, and I have one in my hand right here. It's called We Will Not Be Silenced. I should also mention you're a familiar voice on Christian radio. Many people know your voice and know your name, and it's an honor to have you with us today, Dr. Lutzer. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be with you today, Stuart, and to talk about things that really matter. And just so that your audience knows, we're going to be talking about freedom of religion and a lot of other things, but the reason is to help the church to stand strong. I wrote the book, We Will Not Be Silenced, because I think oftentimes we are shamed into silence, and we need to know what to speak, what the issues are, and speak with a sense of confidence and courage.
There are a lot of people who are ready to call you and me and all the people watching really nasty names because of the things we believe and the things we stand for. And they're also actively working to silence us, to keep us from speaking into the national conversation. Many people give up and they say, I'd rather just be silent. The name of your book is We Will Not Be Silenced. They'd rather be silenced than be called a name. You're saying, no, you got to stand up.
Exactly. And if we are intimidated, and in the book I show all the different ways in which people today are intimidated, we aren't really good representatives of Jesus Christ. We have to join the whole session of church history where people have always been willing to stand for their faith and to take the consequences. That's the way the church should be today.
What's the key for Christians? What do we need to be thinking as we engage the culture?
We need to be thinking about a lot of things, but first of all, let me tell you why I wrote the book, We Will Not Be Silenced. I began to realize that the radical left in America does not believe that America can be fixed. It has to be destroyed and rebuilt upon a quasi-Marxist foundation. Now, your listeners need to understand that cultural Marxism is different than classical Marxism. Classical Marxism was primarily economic. Cultural Marxism says we can bring about the very same kind of a lifestyle and country incrementally. Now, Marx was opposed to the family because he believed that men oppress their wives, and of course, children are oppressed, and God is the ultimate oppressor. So we have to free the family and basically destroy it. Now, isn't it interesting that Black Lives Matter, for example, on their website, not only says that they are willing to disillusion, or I should say the disillusionment of their family, but they go on to talk about the fact that they are indeed Marxists. Now, here's what I do in the book. I take the principle of cultural Marxism and I apply it to the vilification of our history. This is so critical for people. Schlesinger, who was a confidant of President Kennedy, said, history is to a nation what memory is to a person. Now, Stuart, we know that if someone has lost his memory, he becomes whatever people say he is. So they want us to lose our collective memory. But then I show how that Saul Alinsky and others, they took the principle of cultural Marxism and they applied it to race. And the whole intention, your audience needs to understand that the intention of all of these diversity studies has to do with continual conflict between the races with no hope of reconciliation. Reconciliation is a bad word. They do not believe what Martin Luther King taught, that we should judge one another by the content of our character and not the color of our skin. Now, the Church of Jesus Christ, by the way, has an answer for that, and maybe we can talk about that. But then I take and I apply it also to freedom of speech. People don't understand that Marx taught, and the Marxists have taught, that it's time for the oppressed to speak. So men like Marcuse, who was a Marxist in the 60s, said, you know, the only way socialism can prevail is if the capitalists are not allowed to speak because they are the oppressors. Remember, Karl Marx believed that oppression was the key to history. just remove the oppression and people are going to live righteously.
And the irony of that is they're turning into the oppressors against our point of view. I mean, they're suppressing and oppressing where we come from.
Exactly. And yet their argument would be, you know, we are interested in liberating people, and the way in which we liberate people is, of course, to take away freedom of speech from those who would want to bring people into bondage. Now, isn't it interesting? This is just an aside. But the freedom of speech that they use to write books like this is the very freedom of speech that they deny to us and deny to others. Now, one of the most interesting chapters, I think, has to do with the whole issue of propaganda. How does propaganda work? Can I take a moment, Stuart, and explain that to her?
Yeah, go ahead.
The purpose of propaganda is to so shape people's view of reality that even when confronted with a mountain of evidence, they will not change their minds. The eventual hope, of course, is that people will enjoy their slavery and their limitations. So how is this brought about? First of all, collective demonization, which was perfected in Russia. If the state deplatformed somebody, everyone else chimed in and said, we agree, even if they didn't know the person. Same thing happened in Hitler's Germany. There were churches that put up swastikas on their door saying that when you come for the Christians, don't come for us because we are on your side. And people today are asking the question, am I on the right side of wokeness? Woe to the person who is on the wrong side of being woke.
Yeah.
So you have the suppression of freedom of speech that is happening today. And then we could go on and say, and I have to throw this in, the whole issue of censorship and, of course, propaganda. They say that they use, this is critical, they use words that camouflage their real meaning and their real desire. Let me go to Hitler, for example. You know that I've written a book on Hitler, Nazi Germany. Hitler, when he starved children, called it putting them on a low-calorie diet. When he killed Jews, it was cleansing the land. Euthanasia was using the best of modern therapy. So here's what propaganda does, and I want everyone listening to this to understand. Propaganda says we will give you what you want to hear, we'll say what you want to hear, but we will give you what we want you to have. And you know, the whole business of language, which I discuss in my book, We Will Not Be Silenced, the whole business of language, when it has to do with, the proper pronouns and so forth, it's to intimidate us.
My son works at a fast food restaurant. He was taking an order, and the woman in the drive-thru line said, what are your preferred pronouns? And he was dumbfounded, and he didn't have a good answer, because you can order chicken without needing a pronoun.
Exactly, and what he should have said is, I am a man. I have the pronoun he, thank you very much. We live in a very confused age, and the purpose of that confusion, once again, is to keep us silent. Now, to just finish a quick survey.
Go ahead.
I have a chapter on the sexualization of children and what is happening in our schools, which is awful. But people also have to understand that every chapter in this book has a section for the church. How should the church respond? Because at the end of the day, what I'm interested in is, how does the church respond? And one of the longest chapters possibly is on socialism. We can discuss that too. And I point out why it is that it is so attractive, but eventually socialism of necessity ends up being a paradise for parasites.
It works really well on the front end, but it never ends well, because people like what they get early on, but then they don't like what comes down the road.
Well, like Margaret Thatcher says, pretty soon you run out of other people's money, right? So when you think of socialism, it's like a pie, and what you have to do is to cut it in various pieces, but once the pie is gone, there are no more pies. That's why socialists always talk about dividing up the wealth. but they never talk about creating it, because socialism cannot create wealth. It just can't do it. And so what happens is all that the government can do is to create wealth by printing more money, which of course leads to inflation and so forth.
Which we're seeing right now in our very nation.
I love what Churchill said. Churchill said that the great vice of capitalism is the unequal distribution of blessings, and the great benefit of socialism is the equal distribution of misery.
Yeah.
And while I'm on the topic, Stuart, always remember this: the reason that mice die in mouse traps is because they don't understand why the cheese is free.
So let's talk about pushing back. A large part of what we do at First Liberty Institute is fight in the court system for religious freedom for individuals, organizations, other entities. How do we push back against all this? It's an onslaught. It's worse than ever before in our country. How do we start pressing back against this and returning us to our roots? You talked about our history, for example. We need to remember the Constitution, I suspect, to start with.
If you are involved, as your ministry is, in pushing back through legislation, you are on the front end at the battle that is most important. It was Rush Dooney who said, "Show me your laws and I will show you your God." If there's no law above the Supreme Court is God. If there's no law above you, you are your own God. So that's why the battle rages in the legal area. And what we need is organizations that push back. Now, that's the legal side. We also need people who are willing to fight the culture by not being intimidated by the culture.
Absolutely.
You know, we have to teach our students, for example, many students who go to a college, Christian students, they will not be talked out of their faith, but they will be mocked out of their faith.
Wow.
So
yeah.
The question is, how do we fortify them in such a way that they can stand against this onslaught of the culture? And, you know, we have to get back to the early church and church history, where people were willing to stand for Christ and take the flak. None of us like to be called names. But you have to understand that that also is part of propaganda. Rather than be interested in a person's argument, what you are interested in is calling them a name. You're a hater because you're not on our list, or you're a bigot.
Which avoids the entire discussion of important ideas. You just call somebody a name and hope they go away.
That's right. And of course, if you're pro-life, you know, you hate women. If you believe in strong borders, like I argue in the book that we should all believe in, well, you're just a bigot. You're a racial bigot. And so we need to be able to counteract that. You know, critical race theory, which is also discussed in the book, We Will Not Be Silenced, critical race theory is very destructive. Imagine having this laid on children, that because of the color of your skin, you are therefore responsible and you are essentially evil, where one side has all of the virtues and the other side has all of the vices. So what I do in the book, because you're asking about the response of the church,
yeah,
I show this, that the Church of Jesus Christ has the answer at this particular point, okay? Because we say that at the foot of the cross, the differences between us are quite negligible. We are all created in the image of God. We are all sinners. We come to the cross of Christ to receive forgiveness. And then we ask the question, what can we do together to make things better? Critical race theory continues to tear apart what Jesus died to bring together. And I show that that is done intentionally. Christianity says we really don't have a skin problem. We really do have a sin problem, and that needs to be dealt with. So we're living at a time when all of these cultural issues are deliberately being fueled, and believe it or not, from the grave, Karl Marx still rules.
Thank you for putting all these ideas into the book. I really enjoyed talking to you. Lots of great insight in there. I think people will enjoy getting more of that. Again, as we will not be silenced, Dr. Erwin Lutzer, it's an honor and a privilege to get to meet you. Thanks for hanging out with us.
Thank you, Stuart, and keep doing what you're doing because we live at a very critical time.
Hey, if these ideas resonate with you and you would like to join in the fight, we invite you to support and partner with us at First Liberty Institute. We appreciate that. And also, if you're enjoying these videos, remember to like and share. That's how we get to meet new people. We'll see you next time right here on First Liberty Live.